Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby!
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. This is your Friday edition. Hopefully you and your family had a fantastic Thanksgiving feast. I know we did. A couple different visits, which, you know, by the end of the day, that last meal starts to get real rough. You go to the other family member's house, you're eating the same thing again, and not like the day after leftovers, which I think have a nice sweet spot, but the second or third meal that you get involved in, it's the same things, gets a little brutal. So A lot of tired feelings yesterday. Needed some naps that we weren't able to get around here, but we pushed through. And hopefully you guys had a great Thanksgiving as well. Excited to bring back in John Colosimo to join us on our Friday edition. John, how are you, my friend?
Doing excellent, Jake. You know, I mean, this is my favorite holiday. So, and I'm with you on the. I haven't had to travel like that, but when I was younger, I used to do that. So I know exactly what you're talking about, but I haven't had to deal with that in a few years. But spirits are up, man. We get the 4 days off, get the good meal. What I love about Thanksgiving is it's kind of like untouched by commercial messes. You know, it's still just family, football, and food.
How can you go wrong? How can your favorite holiday not be the one built around food alone, you know? Yeah. Maybe I'm just a fatty, but whatever. Like, hey, it's just my favorite, so.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, we had a fiasco over here. We tried to deep fry our turkey, but the deep fryer was was not functioning the way that I felt comfortable deep frying a turkey. The propane was kind of getting a little leaky, and I saw it light up toward the wrong side of this thing one time. I'm like, nope, pulling the plug on that. So we had to go to good old Bob Evans to grab a turkey for this one on the day of Thanksgiving for my family. So that was a nice treat. But otherwise, pretty uneventful, and good food and good times and good people, and that's all we can ask for, right?
Absolutely, man.
All right, well, let's talk around the NFL. So I think the thing that you and I try to take like an overarching thought about the rest of the league and where it's at. And the thing that just continues to stand out to me above anything else is how weird and wild and unpredictable it feels like it has been. I mean, Tennessee, the team that's started to look like it was taking advantage and putting its foot down on the rest of the AFC, loses to Houston, who's terrible. And we've seen Buffalo lose to Jacksonville and then get blown out maybe the Colts are better than I think they are, but they get blown out. I mean, we've seen the Dolphins upset the Ravens. It just feels like there's less a gap between the good and bad of the NFL than there ever has been. And you can correct me if I'm wrong there. It just feels like it. And then I saw a stat, too, that said last year there were 7 quarterbacks when the year finished who were 70 QBR and above. Now, obviously, we have plenty of time for someone to get there, but as it sat yesterday, there was not a single quarterback with a 70, and I think the number's right. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong there, but there's a number that QBR was above. 7 quarterbacks were above it last year. There's not a single one that's above it this year. Now, I don't know if that's, crowd noise involved again, the pressure with more people in the stadium, obviously the environment makes it harder to switch plays, things like that. I'm not sure, but those two things stood out to me. Do you align with those, John, about quarterback play struggling a little bit because of environment, maybe even home environment, as we heard from Baker Mayfield, and then just the weirdness of maybe it's because we're focused on the AFC where it's especially weird, but I just feel like the gap is closing. I don't know. It's just it's unpredictable, man, and it feels very strange. I've always thought there's a lot of injury unpredictability. I've thought that over the years, but It just feels like, okay, who's good and who's not? Is it just like to get the right week at the right time? I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, this is a wacky year. I mean, like, flat out, I think unpredictable is probably the right word. I do like pick 'em league every year, and you pick 5 games against the spread, and it's been absolutely brutal. And I just. It's like you said, you don't know who's good. You don't know how good anybody is. And I think it's just league wide. I mean, you just pick a team, you know, whether it's Kansas City, like who's having the year that they expected to have, you know, maybe sort of Tampa Bay. But even that can be week to week. You know, we've got a few left, but I still don't know. Here we sit in, you know, what is this week 12? And I have no idea what's going to happen here. Like, you know, anything that I thought 12 weeks ago is, you know, under fire. And, you know, as far as predicting who's going to end up with this trophy, I mean, you basically just got to stick with priors almost. You know, I mean, it's almost impossible to predict week to week. And, you know, like you said, like Tennessee had run off this streak. They beat like 3-4 of the best teams in the NFL, supposedly. Oh, and then they get their butts kicked by Indy's. I think they're a solid team. I think Carson has had a better year than I expect, certainly. This way it began, remember? Like, he had the thing, and, you know, they didn't even know if he was going to play for a while. It's just, this is a really, really strange year. And for me, it's one I'm going to remember. Just for its quirkiness.
It is full of, you know, a bunch of, we think this team is good, maybe they're not good. I don't know. I know there's obviously been plenty of stories of teams that have won the Super Bowl who started out with records that, you know, the 6-4, 7-3 type of range, where maybe they're not dominating the league like you thought. It just, to me, has felt like, you know, we've thought teams were going to be good in this league this year, and then it's like, okay, why are they losing to this team? Doesn't totally make a ton of sense, or whatever. And I don't know if it's like there's better talent across the league now, like where the basement of the NFL has been raised, so you can't sleep through some of the games that some teams have been able to in the past sleep through. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if it's more injuries than usual causing teams that are good or who have snuck in some nice records to then, you know, sort of be shorthanded in important spots, and teams are finding, is the coaching better? Is the coaching able to pinpoint more weaknesses? Does the increased volume of passing around the NFL lead to more variation in results? Some weeks your passing stuff is fine, other weeks it's not. There's probably a really good study to be done on this. I'm not going to be the guy to do it, but I just, it's just something I've been thinking lately. I just feel like I've been involved in the NFL, whether closely watching it or writing on it or something, for a while. And this is the weirdest season I can remember. Like, I just don't, I feel like I know who's good. And that's strange. Like, I just feel like any team, any week can beat anybody. And that's more prevalent than I feel like it used to be. You know what I'm saying?
No, I, you know, I'm treating it as like a, you know, a one-off, and I don't necessarily, my view of it is that this is just a weird year. I don't think there's going to be, I think people will try, and I will definitely read those studies to figure things out. But I don't think that there's going to be an overarching theme that explains what happens this year. And I think we're headed for the kind of year where truly whoever gets hot at the end is going to come out on top. I think that's just watch for who's really, you know, good these last 2-3 weeks of the season. And that's probably who's got the best shot coming into these playoffs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. I mean, who's healthy too. I think healthy is obviously every year a big factor, but the health will swing a lot of these things as they traditionally do. But is continuity stuff gets challenged as you get late in the year. I do think there is a relative coaching, an uptick in coaching quality in terms of deciphering weaknesses of teams. I've actually been pretty impressed when watching teams play the Browns, pinpointing a lot of the weaknesses that they have and exploiting them at a higher clip than I think the Browns have been able to do to some other teams. Maybe this is me focusing more on the Browns defense and how teams have manipulated them, but definitely something I've noticed. And I think across the league, at least from people that I listen to who comment across the league, it's like, there's a lot of conversation about, well, the you know, this, the X team's offense knew exactly where they wanted to go. And it's just, it could be something. Again, I think there's more than what I'm just saying right now, but sure, there's something going on here that is a little bit more abnormal than I think it's just, to me, than just a one-off, where I think this might be the norm for the NFL going forward, where it might not make as much sense as we think it does from week to week. And it's, you know, I always say this on this podcast, the motivation business stuff, where social media is now so popular that anything that is said, it's just, it feels like it drives across to the team, the other team, and not taking them serious. You know, and it's not even just like a player said bulletin board material, but it's everybody telling you you're going to win. You know, it didn't used to be that way where everybody was saying the certain, but if you read enough, or if you follow the certain people that you follow that cover the team and they think the team's going to win, you start to believe it's just going to happen by showing up. And I do think that that could have a little part of it too, but I also could be an idiot who's just searching for reasoning behind just a one-off season, like you're saying, probably higher odds than that. But I want to ask you real quick before we switch over. We watched the turkey games yesterday, and I found myself wondering who would win. I think even somebody had tweeted it out. Maybe that's where my mind went to it. But who would win, the 2017 Browns or the 2021 Lions? And I'd have to lean. I think I'd lean Browns. I actually think I would. I think the Lions are pretty terrible. Really terrible. I actually think the Browns would be able to get that done with Sean Kizer. Where are you at on that? Didn't prepare you for this question, but your gut's going to tell you one thing or the other. That Lions team is putrid right now.
It's bad. It's bad. They have some okay stuff in the trenches. They got more competent quarterback play than Kizer. I mean, if you recall the all-time red zone numbers that he had that were so bad in the red zone. I mean, historic. And ultimately, you hit me with that, from my blind side here, but Hugh Jackson, I still like Dan Campbell more than Hugh Jackson. I mean, I have like almost a personal hatred for Hugh. I can't possibly take the Browns in that, but you know, these Lions are really bad, and it should be, you know, it's interesting because those Browns actually did play hard for you.
They did
that whole year. So it's similar to that. I think these Lions play hard for Dan as well, but I'm going to lean on the Hugh versus Dan Campbell. And I don't know how historically that's going to play out, but I'm going to make my money betting against Hugh Jackson.
I think a lot of people made a lot of money doing exactly what you just said, so probably the safe way to go. I'm actually pretty surprised how the public opinion has swayed on Dan Campbell, who I think everybody was ready to bury before he even started, and has seemed to a nice job of like balancing out some of the traditional football stuff, or almost playing into it, you know, like leaning into that stuff.
But he does some smart things, you know. It's funny because he set
except for when
up.
They played the Browns. I mean, they wanted to lose that game. Oh, my goodness.
They tried pretty hard. I mean, guys, there isn't a big pot of gold at the end of this rainbow. You could have won that game, and it would have been fine. It's not like there's an Andrew Luck there waiting for you, and you got to make sure you got to lose these games. But, yeah, you're right. They really were on a mission to lose that game.
They did everything they could, man. They kicked that field goal, then they wouldn't go for it on a 4th-and-3. I mean, like...
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's a bad week for me to say that he does this. overall in the year, he's been... I guess he set the bar so low, and then it turned out he was actually doing, you know, data-wise, some smart things, like fourth down decisions and stuff like that, when it looked like he was just going to be a straight-up, you know, donkey... with some of that, you know, talk in the off season. But yeah, it's probably the wrong week for me to say they've done some smart things, but I'm really talking about from the low bar they set.
Well, we're eyeing you up, Detroit. We empathize with you. Yes. We've been there, and hopefully you guys can turn around. Like you said, though, there is not, I mean, I think that the Thibodeau kid from Oregon is pretty solid, and there's some other good football players. I think this draft will be more of a depth draft than it will be a highlight at the top of the draft type of draft.
Oh, some very good players. Yeah. I guess I mean quarterback wise.
No,
you know?
I just think this is going to be like look at all of the pretty solid players that ended up coming out of this draft, and it's not going to be like a ton of Hall of Fame type guys. I just I'm with you. I guess what I'm saying is I'm definitely with. I wouldn't tank for any one player in this draft. I'd have no desire to do that. Even, you know, it's not even a Chase Young to me that's out there that's floating in this thing that would make you feel great about that first or a Bosa or a Miles or anything like that. Because you can tank for the right edge player. I think you can feel good about that if you get that guy. But this one is a weird one. So anyway, good luck, Detroit. Let's shift to the AFC North as we always do. The Bengals end up. Surprisingly, the game started really strange. I actually thought they were going to get it handed to them a little bit there, but then they ended up rallying, and somehow 32-13, the Raiders, who, and again, I know the Raiders are going through it, but the Raiders we just saw yesterday beat Dallas. They're fighting, they're clinging, and it's like, to me, the message I have about Cincinnati is, yeah, the Browns got them really well at home, but they're not going anywhere. I really think they're on their way to 10 wins or more. Like, I could see them get – I mean, they go Pittsburgh. I fully expect them to beat a beat-up Pittsburgh team. They host the Chargers, who I don't think are quite as good as people thought they were going to be after they beat Cleveland early in the year. They host the 49ers, winnable. They go to Denver, winnable. Host the Ravens, probably don't win that one. But then you have a home game against the Chiefs and Bengals. I mean, like – what are they, 6-5 right now, or 6-4?
6-4.
I mean, do you see 4 wins there potentially? I could see them winning 3, and then you coin flip 3 others. I just think they're going to be around, man.
Yeah, the way that this season has gone, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say that, you know, they absolutely have a shot here. You know, so they we'll see. I mean, you know, they've been consistent in certain ways. You know, they're. I don't know. I mean, yeah, they could end up with 10, and that would be very different than what I thought. Not that different. I mean, I didn't see them being above 500, and now we could be talking, you know, 10-7 pretty easy.
They just have enough skill talent, and Joe does enough. I mean, those three receivers that if you're not on point like Cleveland was when they played them, if you have any lapse in coverage, I mean, if you look back at that game, go through the statistics of it, this is who they are. They find a way to get Joe Mixon going. I mean, he goes for 123 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's healthy, playing good football. And then you just, even when you hold down, I mean, Tyler Boyd led the group 6 for 49, Jamar Chase 3 for 32. And it's like when the defense shows up and plays relatively good football, creates a couple turnovers, all of a sudden they've put 30 points on you. So that's why I think people might have underestimated them, and the people, when I say people, it's including me, healthy Joe Mixon, not a very good player last year, we thought might be slipping a little bit, but when he's really playing good football, he's a tough cover. And then you mix in the passing talent and you got a pretty dangerous group there that, despite Joe Burrow only throwing for 148 yards, they're able to hang 32 points on the board. So they're different than I think, different in a way that I think I underestimated them. So I since he again has my attention.
Think about, you know, the wide receiver core there that they are putting on the field this week compared to what we will be putting out on the field.
It's impressive. I said it when they drafted him, man, like that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for Tyler Boyd. I think he's a tough football player. And when I was calling their 3 wide receiver group, which again, they run a ton of 11 personnel, and why would you not? It is one of the most impressive groups in the NFL. And
it's a good tight ends as well. And they're solid young guys.
Yeah, Uzoma's been really good for them this year. Mm-hmm. So I don't look forward to playing them again, and I think they're going to have a really nice run for the next 5 years or so as far as contention. Pittsburgh gets some karma delivered back into their lap. I was like just sitting in my chair watching this game with LA thinking there's – How could this happen? Like, how could a blocked punt, among other things, leads to a whole bunch of goofiness? And it's like, I'm just like, how can LA let this game slip away like that? Now, Justin Herbert did Justin Herbert things, and they ended up winning the game because of a busted coverage and a nice Joey Bosa sack late. But man, just amazed that Pittsburgh could hang around. But the thing that's amazing to me, really, truly amazing, is that despite all of the production, you know, they went for 37 points, now largely based off the block punt, like I said, and then they had a turnover, a batted ball way up in the air that ends up getting intercepted. They only went for 300 yards. They're still a putrid offense, in my opinion. Ben put together his best performance of the year, 273 yards and 3 touchdowns, but they only went 39 rushing yards on the ground for Najee Harris. And it's like, that's the best version. And if the best version for them is only going to get 300 yards, I still can't take Pittsburgh serious. So I don't view them as a serious contender. They're going to win some games still that they should win, that they shouldn't win because of draft position, that they should be looking at how they get their team right for the next whatever amount of years. I don't know how that'll happen for them. I don't have a problem with them, I guess, John, winning 8-9 games. I think I even called it before the year that even though they weren't going to be very good, I was like, I could still see them getting to 9 wins or so just by nature of who they are. But I'm just happy that they're winning these games at this point because it gives them a worse draft pick and a draft that they'll need to get something good to keep moving forward. So I guess I'm still collectively not worried about Pittsburgh this year, and I don't see how they ever become what they used to be, because I guess unless they land a trade for one of these quarterbacks in the offseason, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's a possibility, but you know, I'll have to see it to believe it. You know, they Pittsburgh, this just isn't going to be the year that they fix it. You know, nobody's going to convince me that they're going to get a 1-year fix. Now they've got, you know, some good bones, and maybe they take one of these quarterbacks. And, you know, I've been telling, you know, this quarterback, I'm sure there'll be some quarterback that hits in this draft. But nobody's going to know which one it is. And, hopefully it's not one that, the Steelers, you know, I would like to see them grab a quarterback, like we said a couple weeks ago, you know, and put a few years into a bad quarterback. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a quick fix. So anybody thinking, oh yeah, we'll just, we'll grab Aaron Rodgers. No, it's not happening.
I don't think it is either. I don't think it is either. They could get Russell Wilson or something. I mean, it's not like people would hate to play for Pittsburgh, granted, like where the organization's been for all those years. It's not like you're taking a flyer on an organization that doesn't try to support its rosters. You know what I'm saying?
But you, can you even imagine though that, you know, the Steelers have been like a very, if nothing else, a steady conservative franchise for my whole life. Could you imagine them making a crazy blockbuster trade for a veteran quarterback? That just seems so out of character for the organization as a whole. I just can't wrap my head around that idea.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, I guess it's like they stumbled into Ben and they never needed to, right? I don't know what they did before Ben. I mean, I know those were like Tommy Maddox days, right?
Yeah, Maddox.
Some ugly quarterbacks, right?
Oh, some bad ones, yeah.
I just...
Absolutely.
I guess it's how... What tells me they might is how aggressive they were with Minkah Fitzpatrick and willing to give up a first-round pick to
defense,
do it.
You know?
I'm with you. It's just like... If they're willing to do that for a safety, why wouldn't they be willing to do that if a quarterback really, Russell Wilson's really available? I'm totally with you. I think it's easy for us sometimes to like think that certain organizations won't do things at quarterback because they've always been good. Well, it's like, well, why would they need to, right? They did it the right way, and kudos. I mean, Roethlisberger panned out, and all of that with the pick you took him at. But like, when they get desperate, when their back's up against the wall, will they come off of that? I think I'd be more surprised if Baltimore ended up being a team that had done that, hadn't they not landed Lamar. But Pittsburgh seems just, I'm just hunching it based off of the Minka thing, where it was like, really? That seems like a, that just seemed super aggressive. And at a time where they didn't really know what Ben was going to be. So they were really, because Ben was like coming off surgery at that point, or his, it was maybe before his surgery. I can't remember the year where he ruptured that elbow up or whatever he did. I think they might have made the Minka trade before that, but they at least knew Ben was, he was pushing the limit here. I mean, it's not like he was coming off all these great seasons and he was still trending young. So they were aggressive about it there at that point when there were some good quarterback drafts coming. So I don't know.
They did it with Devin Bush too. Even the Devin Bush thing was bonkers, in my opinion, as far as
it's proven
what
to
you
be
were doing.
Now.
Yeah.
You know, he looks putrid. I know he's coming off the
ACL. I thought it was bad at the time. Like, you just don't, you don't trade that kind of draft capital to move up for a linebacker. I just don't. I thought it was bad at the time. You know, the Minka one has worked out probably better than that one. And I thought that one was bad just from a, you know, a resource standpoint. You know, long term, these guys should pay for those two moves. And I hope that they're not bailed out by a idiotic move by Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks.
I would hope Seattle can decipher that they need to keep him over. Keep him over Pete, but
yeah,
they,
but it's always been a weird thing out there with them. They've never been like, you know, even when he was getting his first raise, they were, you know, he had to pry it out of Pete Carroll just to get that first raise. It's never felt like that was a good marriage between those two.
Well, I hope they don't. I hope they don't luck into something like that, because that would be,
agreed,
it would be really annoying. Like you said, it'd be fun to watch them toil around for a while trying to figure out quarterback. Like we deserve to watch that. Not that the NFL cares about what a fan base deserves or not, but I would just, it would be a really fun thing to watch, because I'm tired of watching Baltimore and Pittsburgh just continually keep these trains moving along. So, talking about Baltimore, they're the cockroaches, man. They will not, they end up giving up a late score. They're starting Huntley and they figure it out, and it doesn't make any sense how they figured out how to win that game, but they did. And they are, to me, until if Cleveland goes and beats them this week, and we'll talk about that in a minute, they're the favorites in the division. I know they lost that Miami game, and I know it was weird and all of that, and we thought it gave a big recipe for how to beat them, but I just... It's a mixture at this point. It's a mixture of a franchise that is expected to win, a bunch of people, coaches, players who have formed their identity on that winning, in a mixture of two of ridiculous luck. And it's just, that's just what it is. You know what I mean? It's like fortitude and toughness and belief that you're going to win because that's all you've ever done, maybe since you've gotten into the NFL, or that's what the coaching staff teaches you to do, the right things to win there. But it's also asinine luck at the same time, right? Where it's just that's what their season is at this point, and you have to just expect it. If you don't expect it, then that's on you, in my opinion. And you have to do everything you can to put these guys away. But I'm worried about this week. But I definitely think Baltimore has earned the right to be the favor or the favorite in this division at this point.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm very pessimistic at this point. Looking at the season with the Browns and with this division, you know, a month ago, you know, you're talking about, or maybe a little more than a month ago, you're talking about this division as, you know, maybe the best in the, you know, in the sport this year. Now I see this division as, you know, a group of decent football teams that have absolutely no chance at holding a trophy at the end of the year.
I do too. I kind of feel like maybe we're losing or miscalculating the idea of being a really good division with being a bunch of bad teams that are just kind of like just bad teaming each other in roulette fashion. That's definitely fair. I don't think Cleveland is who we thought they were, whether that's because of what we're going to talk about with Baker and the injuries or whatever it's turned into. They're definitely not who we thought they were going to be. And I think that's true of some other teams in the division as well. So let's transition. I mean, you haven't had a real chance. You didn't talk last week, John. So, you know, we saw him struggle with New England, and then we saw him struggle here in just a wild form against the Lions, where it was like, you know, it was uncomfortable. I think the best word is it was uncomfortable, where you saw him just hurting them, like actively hurting them. And I've speculated all week, whether through my own just talking to myself or having guests on, about whether this decision to play him, who it's coming from, because I'm just totally not sure who it's coming from at this point, because it's weird to me that we can all see it and nobody else is seeing it. But I don't know. I don't think they're Russell Crowing Baker Mayfield out there as a gladiator. I don't think they're forcing him to go out there and play. I definitely think he thinks he can play, but to me it's like, okay, we can see it. It's pretty clear Kevin's frustrated on the sidelines, but is there like a mandate that, hey, if he's cleared and he says he wants to play, he plays, no questions asked. Like, I just don't know if we're there, but maybe you can add some light to what you've been thinking about the whole situation.
No, it's a mess. It's a mess. And I think that the organization, you know, as far as playing and not playing, you know, I think people might be overrate our backup, you know, to where you think, you know, why are they playing him over Case or whatever the case. I just don't think they have much going on at the position, no matter who goes out there. And Baker is beat to crap right now, and he's playing poorly besides that. And at this point, like I said, I'm feeling very pessimistic. I wonder how much damage you can do and I'm not talking physically, how much damage that you can do in the final six games of this season. I think that, you know, locker room wise, like, how bad can he play? How much of an effect can that have on the teammates? Can you hold the locker room with a quarterback playing this badly?
And also, too, John, like the fans, where is it going to be like, okay, Baker clearly impacted, not himself by injuries, whatever, and the fans are booing, and whether that is all booing Mayfield or all booing the team's performance in general, I don't think people have talked enough about that, where it's like, okay, maybe not just booing Baker, they're probably booing everybody because they're playing poorly. But then it's like, okay, if Baker were missing these games and Case Keenum was in there and they were still struggling, it'd be like, well, we'll get Baker back next year and all those good. But then this year it's like, okay, we're putting him out there and he's not playing well, and it's obvious why he's maybe not playing well or not. You know, there are some things I think the injuries are impacting, some things I think that his own issues, but like, It's getting to a point where I think that it's clearly affecting Baker. Like, the booing is giving him issues. He's commenting on them. He's clearly bothered by them. He's walking off the field. He's not talking to anybody. Skipping media, you know, responsibilities. So it's like, it's not just the locker room, which I think you're spot on about. Like, I just think maybe it you start to worry about it if it continues on the path it's going, doing damage to how he feels about Cleveland and how Cleveland feels about him, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, this is spiraling to depths that I never saw as a possibility. And you know what? Like, I'm going to say this, you know, Emily, shut the F up, man. You know, and that's not about like being a woman or anything like that. She is not helping this. And, you know, putting this bullshit out on social media is just stoking the fans' fires. Like, Cleveland can get ugly. You got to know that. Like, it's not, you know, I'm not talking about myself, but those guys in the stands, I mean, we're the team that cheered when, you know, our quarterback got hurt. Don't forget that. The same people are here, and it could, you know, we're approaching that kind of ugliness in the fan base right now. And we got six games of this left. Yeah. I mean, Jesus, like, I'm like I said, like, I'm in a bad place, like, looking at this. And, you know, me personally, you know, obviously I'm just kind of getting dejected. You know, I don't want to lash out on anybody. You know, I'm certainly not booing or, you know, or any of those things. But I'm telling you that things, if you think they can't get worse, it can. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely might.
And
so,
also, like, maybe don't take the opinion of 70% of the crowd that's just absolutely hammered drunk. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't get too offended by those folks. I mean, like, I think there's a lot of people that have really good perspective on this. And then there's, you know, they're drunk and stupid. Like, it's, yeah, I get it. You're going to be offended anytime somebody boos you. It's human nature, but you're not dealing with the smartest people.
He has to know how bad he's playing, though, right?
That's the thing that...
He has to know how bad he is playing.
Yeah, that's where you start to worry about what Nate Tice said earlier in the year, which is that lack of self-awareness for him as a player.
Yeah.
And does that lack of self-awareness creep into how he perceives he's playing? Do you know what I mean? Like, he thinks, I'm not playing too bad. I've hit some of these throws. You don't know what I'm dealing with injury-wise. Well, no, man, if you go view this from a neutral perspective here, dude, you were literally hurting the team. Like, you were missing several open throws, your turnovers that are hurting the team that are clearly, if you look at the coaches, what he's saying after them, and, you know, you look at the defense and how they play in response to a turnover you make, it's like, yeah, you have to understand how bad you're hurting the team. And skipping media stuff is bad. It's bad.
It's a bad look. I don't care about it as much as some people on that regard, and I don't believe the he's not talking to teammates thing. But
I don't believe either. But you would agree. You have to talk to the media. It's like it's your league responsibility, man.
True. I mean, it's in the contracts.
I'm with you though. I think listen, I don't want to talk to some of those guys either. Trust me, I'm not like begging you to talk to the media. But part of being the leader of a franchise is you have to face it no matter when you have to, you know, the good or the bad.
Absolutely.
The good or the bad. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Where do you think it goes? How do you feel about him this weekend? It's a dangerous game.
I mean, I have no idea. First of all, you know, the expectations were so high. This team has underperformed just about in every imaginable way. Like I said, this week, there's no reason to be, I'm the wrong person to be talking to right now. There's no reason to be hopeful right now. here's where I am right now. And I apologize if this is not good for a pod, but you know, this team, you know, could, even in the best of scenarios, this team comes out and wins this division, which is almost impossible. Even if they won, they can't beat anybody in the playoffs. This team is not good. And they could come out and win this week, and, you know, I'll cheer for that. But, you know, it's not going to make me think they're going to come out of the bye week and win again. I don't see the path here. And all at this point I'm hoping for is damage control. And that requires them to start playing better and feel good by the end of the year. And it's hard to see how that happens right now. And I just hope and then you deal with the problems with him going forward. He's under contract next year. But you know, and I've been 100% convinced that he's going to be the quarterback next year, but I'm not sure now, you know, honestly, God, it can get so bad, so toxic, that might not be the case. They might take extreme steps at the quarterback position after this year, and find a way to move on if it gets much uglier. And like I said, I mean, 6 games is a long time, guys. It's a long time. Yeah. It's a lot of bad football. If you play bad football for these next 6 games, I can't say that they won't do something extremely drastic, you know, and I mean drastic because he's got guaranteed money next year. He's going to be banged up. He's going to be untradeable, basically, you know, so things could be really bad, and they could be looking at where they just eat that money and move on. I don't know.
I don't either.
That's where I'm at.
That's a great point about the banged up situation. If he had gone out after week 2 and gotten the surgery, he would definitely be coming into this year, next year, I mean, with a clean bill of health, but he's decided to fight through it and whatever, you know, cool. You made that choice, but there's going to be an off-season surgery, and it's like, will he be ready to really go for next year? That's a big question.
Not for another team.
No,
right?
Trading him.
Another team would have to get him. You got to get your quarterback early. You're not going to get your quarterback in training camp. And, you know, so like for any situation where people think that, you know, another team might want to grab a quarterback, it's going to be, you know, at or around time. And there is almost zero possibility that he could pass a physical in that time. So, you know, really limited options. And I'm hoping for right now is to stop the ugliness. And that requires playing better. And I don't know what's going to happen. I just really hope this doesn't come to a crescendo of awfulness.
Well, that's what you're looking at here. We'll talk about how they beat Baltimore real quick, because I think it's pretty easy to look at. I mean, Baltimore's going to do what they always do, which is they're going to get down in your face. They're going to mug you. They're going to get you. I think they sit top five in the NFL in man coverage. They still bring more blitz in the top 10 in blitz percentage. And do they have quick answers? I mean, so there's two ways Baltimore struggled. Teams beating their man coverage, which if you look at Donovan Peoples-Jones coming off the groin, you look at you're not going to get Anthony Schwartz. You're going to look at Rashard Higgins, who's just apparently just not anywhere near the type of player he was in the past years. So, you know, you start adding up all of those things, and okay, they can't beat man coverage that well. They've gotten beat on some missed coverages where guys have run wide open and the quarterback has found them. I don't feel great about Baker Mayfield finding somebody with chaos around him. So it's like, I don't know how they put up a ton of points other than doing what they do, running the football. And that seems to me the only way that they're going to put up any number of points the rest of the year, which is running the football ridiculously well. And that, again, paints a picture in and of itself, John, that they have to run the football to put up a ton of points. But, you know, I just think offensively I'm really worried about it as far as a game where he's throwing fadeaway jumpers because they don't have enough men to block and he doesn't find the quick answer. And it's pretty easy to see how Baltimore could get under his skin and confuse him in this game, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head as far as what I'm thinking. We can't beat their man coverage. There's no reason to think that we can. You know, Baker's not playing well. You're 100% right that the points are going to have to come from big plays in the running game. And I mean big plays, you know, not just general success. We're going to have to hit some home runs. And then the defense is going to have to do its Jekyll and Hyde thing and just have, you know, a week like they had against the Bengals. You know, that's the only recipe for success against this team. You know, even if you play great defense like we did against the Bengals, you still got the Lamar factor. And you know how this Baltimore team has played. So if you know, there's zero chance that there's ever going to be a point in this game where you feel like you're comfortable and we're going to win. Right. Yeah. All the way to the final bell. There's no scenario where I can see the Browns finding themselves where there's going to ever be a point in the game where you feel comfortable. So I just hope that it's entertaining. I hope that the defense can hold these guys down and not embarrass themselves running after Lamar Jackson. And we can hit some home runs in the run game.
Do you think Joe Woods is audacious enough, I guess is the right word. I don't know. Bold enough to try to replicate what some of Miami did, which clearly gave Lamar and the wide receivers issues? Or do you think he just says, we are who we are and we're going to go do this? I'm not asking them to get kooky, like drop their defensive tackle 18 times into coverage like Baltimore did and play catch man at 10 yards. But I do think there's some of that they should be considering doing. Do you think they're bold enough to do that? Or do you think we'll just be chuckling about how they didn't do anything different and Lamar carved them up come Monday?
You know, it's weird. I don't think much of Joe Woods at this point, but, you know, it's a good question. I actually do. I do think that they are capable of doing some weird stuff once in a while. I don't know. I have no idea how to predict that, you know, because it's not predictable. He doesn't seem to adapt to the opponents very well. But once in a while, I have seen a couple of times this year where, you know, just once or twice where we've come out and done some different stuff. So I think that he has it in him. You know, I feel almost like the water boy, you know, where it's like last game of the year, Dan, can't hold anything back now. I don't know. You know, I don't know whether he will. I do think he has it in him. I just don't have any way of predicting whether, you know, whether he will.
Yeah, everybody starts their playoff season at some point. Some teams start it in week 17. Some teams start it in week 4. Some teams start it in week 13 or whatever we're going to be in, week 12. I think we're in week 13 now. I think like Cleveland has started their playoffs here in week 13, right? So They can't afford to lose any more games. You know, they can't afford to lose any of these. So they need to at least split these two, and then you're looking at still some brutal games coming up. So, like, to me, they have, although they can lose and still have percentage odds here, I just feel like they can't afford to lose many more games, period. So this is like them starting the playoffs. So hopefully we see them do some different things. The feeling you have, which I mean, I'm not trying to bum out all of our listeners, and you've made great warnings about where you're at mentally with this team. I am in a very similar spot where even if they win a game or two that they shouldn't win the rest of the way, they are so tragically flawed. It is hard for me to take them as serious as we thought we were going to be taking them earlier in the year. So, yeah, they're not a lost cause in terms of being able to win a football game or two the rest of the way, 3-4, and even maybe getting to 9 or 10 wins. But, like, we saw them as actual Super Bowl contenders. We were really having those conversations, even through early portions of this season. It is hard for me to believe that they have whatever they need to win a Super Bowl, whatever that is, whatever you want to quantify it. I just don't feel like there's a collectiveness, a cohesion, and a performance happening from the individual parts that equal a great, you know, the great sum that you need to go on and beat really good teams and win a Super Bowl. So maybe not the Friday pod you were hoping for from a positivity perspective, but, you know, we come on and give our opinions, and I think that, you know, more often than not, John, we've been pretty good about these in terms of accuracy. So, yeah, any closing words, any closing thoughts before the weekend?
You know, only one. Yeah, you know, guys, enjoy your holiday. Have a good time. You know, football, what happens on that field, it's not your personal, you know, it shouldn't reflect personally on how you feel too much. So that's my only closing thoughts. I know it's been a little bit negative, but overall, you know, life is good. You know, it's the holidays. Enjoy yourself. Don't live or die with what happens this Sunday.
Good advice, because it's got a potential to be a death situation for somebody if they do. So, like John said, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your friends. Whatever you do, enjoy it. I should close with this too, John. How are you feeling about Ohio State, Michigan? What do you think it's? I think it's another situation where people think Michigan has a chance, and it's like, yeah, well, when you look at the talent, they really don't have that much of an opportunity here.
My God, the only chance they've got is if that pass rush just destroys Ohio State.
Yeah.
Other than that, I saw the spread at -7.5, and my eyes bulged. I immediately put my extremely modest bankroll on Ohio State, and I feel extremely good about that. I can't believe that the spread isn't higher.
I do think McNamara is a little more capable than what Michigan's been putting out there for the past 5 to 10 years, but
true.
I just
low
don't.
Bar.
I don't very low bar. I just don't see them being able to consistently match Ohio State in points. Like, I just feels like maybe another 63-30 type. You know what I mean? Like, I just. The discrepancy of wide receiver talent it's wild. It's wild, and I think we're taking a little bit of it for granted at Ohio State how good these wide receivers are. So hopefully that game goes the way we anticipate it will. Hopefully you guys get with family, enjoy it, have a great time. It's a primetime Sunday night game, which I absolutely hate. We will be on here at the OBR late. I think we'll be in an hour before the game, 7 o'clock, so you guys can join us before and join us after. I'm sure we'll be talking to John over the course of the next week or so. We appreciate your time, John.
Hey, have a good one. It's great talking to you. Have a good holiday, buddy.
You too, my friend. All right, guys, thanks for joining us today. Have a great Friday. Enjoy your, like we said, enjoy your weekend with family. Enjoy your weekend with good football. One of the last few good college and NFL weekends combined, which sucks to think about because that means we're getting into the dog days of December and January in terms of where football starts to dwindle down a little bit. But enjoy it while it's here, and we appreciate all your support for this podcast and the OBR and all that good stuff. That really does mean the world to me. Appreciate you guys. Have a great Friday, a great weekend, and go Browns.